it's far beyond a star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt, my heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. Ah. My heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet, I know we'll meet beyond the shore. We'll kiss just as before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. So long sailing, bye-bye sailing, move on out, Captain.
It's the kind of tune you want to listen to whilst you're in the hammock, isn't that right, Ian Lennox?
Oh, I wish I was. It's a bit too cold up here today for that, I'm afraid.
So, it's a fairly wet day in Lincoln, and I'm sure the rain will actually move northwards.
Overcast
as well.
I think the meteorological expression of it.
Highs of 20 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. We'll give you the full weather forecast after the news from the Sky News Centre. Ian,
yes.
So close and yet so far, but once again, you can actually celebrate the joys of a club that actually pay absolutely nothing and pay absolutely zero versus the ownership of a man who effectively has shed blood for the cause of Newcastle United and purchased House of Fraser and a whole heap of other goodies, of course, that awesomeness who is Mike Ashley, who in the words of the former chairman of Crystal Palace, without Mike Ashley, no Rafa Benitez, probably no Newcastle United. At the end of the day, goes back to those fans of the Magpies who even found Sir John Hall objectionable.
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, isn't it? It irritates me because these. What's his name? Parrish, is it? The chairman, the ex-chairman of Crystal Palace?
Indeed, yes.
He's an extremely articulate man. I've heard him talk about football.
Yes.
And he's knowledgeable. But on specific subjects, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Oh, dear.
Because he hasn't done the research.
Okay. Yeah, well, so clearly you're not going to be moved in my ongoing campaign to basically get Ian Lennox to be president of the Mike Ashley fan club.
I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, 2-1, happy result.
I wish him luck in his latest venture, his third attempt to sell Newcastle United.
Well, sometimes you've just got to see where things are actually going for a fine side in Newcastle. and you got a goal, so what are you complaining about? I mean, surely that's all you
need. I got a draw, actually. I was at the game. It's quite an interesting game. They tied in the second half, I think. I think Tottenham had more English players at the World Cup than any other team.
Other than Man City, of course.
Kane, who didn't have a particularly good game, came off after about 70 minutes.
He never does in August.
Apparently.
Harry Kane.
I saw him up here last year, mind, and in the opening game of that season, he hit the post. So I think statistics are overrated at times. There's two or three. Delaney had a good game. But he came off afterwards. It was noticeable. Dyer came off too. So three of the England players were substituted, and it was because they were tired.
Well, the good news, of course, is that Newcastle is sitting pretty at 14th position in the Premiership.
Yes, at no point.
You're ahead of Arsenal, ahead of Brighton, ahead of Cardiff, ahead of Fulham, ahead of Huddersfield, and ahead of West Ham United, all of whom have spent considerable sums of money.
I do admit that Man City looked a little bit awesome. when they played Arsenal.
Well, you know, step by step, although obviously Kevin De Bruyne is taking time out now. Or might have a wee bit of time. Hopefully Phil...
He'll be a big miss, won't he?
Well, Phil Foden will step in.
A big miss for fans in general, you know. I call him the little Napoleon. He's the sort of player who absolutely... He does things that, I mean, it's just...
Although
I just love watching him play.
He's actually Belgium, which is ironic, really, given, of course, the Napoleonic Wars and various other bits and
pieces. Yes, he managed Waterloo.
And I believe his mum was English, so he could have actually played for England as well, but there we are. So,
oh, really? Yes. I didn't know that.
You see, those are the kind of snippets of information I like to share with you, good sir. Ollie and Obo, how are they?
They've had their breakfast, and they're out and about now. They'll be coming in about... an hour, I suppose, and it'll go up for the day, I think, after that.
If I said after the news we're doing a feature with Dr. Rob Wilson, who is one of our colleagues at Sheffield Hallam University, who's done a superb report in terms of football finance, would you be happy to listen in to Rob Wilson and then maybe come back with some thoughts about it? It lasts about 10 minutes or so, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I'm actually trying to read a book about... a lot of it is about football finance and how the big guys have come in and... they're running everything, really.
Well, we talk about a number of things, and I do actually mention Newcastle United during the course of the interview. Right?
You would, I know.
Yes. I mentioned other sides. I even mentioned Lincoln City and...
Have you heard of them?
Thank you. And other clubs that are actually around from that point of view. Even
did he mention Manchester City?
Well, I mean, clearly, you know, the message needs to be put across in some way, shape or form. But if you're kind enough to stay with us, we'll come back to you after the news. We'll share the weather forecast, do a variety of other bits and pieces to take us up to the news. Let me see. It's a little hint of Shotgun with George Ezra. Then, as I say, more magic on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Ian Lennox and Rob Wilson and William Sitwell, and we'll find out what Ian's thoughts are about A-level results day and whether university is important and so on.
Time flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean. There's a mountain top that I'm dreaming of. If you need me, you know where I'll be. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone. I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone, a someone, a someone, a someone.
And actually, because it is so vital and important in so many ways, as it is A-level results day, happy A-level results day. Ian, if you're still there, just share with us, I mean... lots of sort of pressure in the news. We've heard from a number of folk here. We heard from Gabriella earlier in the programme who said she has no regrets whatsoever about coming to university and so on. It's not for everybody. We appreciate that. But any thoughts from yourself, Ian, about the whole university A-level thing? Do you think the media make too much of it?
I don't really know because I'm off the market now, but I think there certainly was a period when I was in journalism where if you got a university degree, you had a pretty good chance of getting a job in journalism. There seemed to be two sorts, you know, the young local lads who got their O-levels and A-levels, and they joined the local newspaper, and often then they moved on to some of the nationals eventually, or just they came back to the local papers, I don't know. Then there's a huge raft of people who came in from university, and they obviously went off to the quality papers, and some of them became very, very good journalists indeed.
So the message perhaps remains, it's not just the degree, it's what you do with the degree.
Well, I think it's down to the individual. When I was teaching at university, there's a huge mix of people. I mean, I presume they're obviously above average intelligence, but there were some who, when we matured 18 and 19, then they had ideas of what they were going to do with their life, and they were more driven, and others who just suddenly... oh, I'm 18, I'm going to get drunk and have parties and things now.
And
they did that, they wasted that for a while. And they probably enjoyed it, I don't know. But there was a difference in attitudes. It was quite startling among people of a similar intelligence.
Words to ponder, Ian Lennox, as ever, deep and important, and you'll be back with us after the news, which indeed I can now promise with great certainty, as I'm looking at the clock and the time as we're filling up to that little slot, is coming to bounce out of the radio sequence in about 10 seconds from now.
FM. Online. Mobile. This is Siren Radio, Lincoln. Siren Radio.
And the weather today, highs of 20 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, and after a cloudy, damp start with some rain, it'll develop into a breezy, fairly cloudy day. Who can still remember the amazement by which Trevor Francis's move from Nottingham Forest to Manchester City for £1 million back in the late 70s was greeted, can probably sort of still sort of start saying, oh, what's going to happen now? Of course, the transfer from Birmingham to Nottingham Forest and so on. It's all changed these days, as many people would actually say, with transfers apparently going through the roof. And yet Tottenham, of course, didn't spend a penny. Now, are they ahead of the game? Is Daniel Levy actually somehow really managing to call things as they will develop? Because a recent report has suggested that managers are taking less risks when investing in their squads compared to a decade ago, and they're also viewing longer term investments as crucial to their game plan. Now, to talk about this and more, we're delighted to welcome an ace individual from Sheffield Hallam University. He's basically got his finger on the pulse when it comes to the whole industry of sport and finance. It's Dr. Rob Wilson. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Yourself?
Excellent. Now, in terms of this particular data, I mean, obviously you're looking at it between 2009 and 2017, and I mean, Man City, my own side, kind of doing so-so stuff in the whole system, but it would seem that you're still looking at developing youth. But hasn't that always been the case in football, that ultimately you want to grow your own?
I think theoretically that's how every club should really be operating, but what we have seen since the advent of the Premier League, and particularly since a number of those really large TV deals went through, particularly over the last 5, 6, 7 years, is many more teams tending to invest, whether it's through foreign imports or domestic signings, spending much more money outside of their own club, in some ways ignoring their own youth development. And you say Manchester City is your club. We looked with Money Farm at the kind of the profiles of some managers. You look at Pep Guardiola, less than 10% of his squad are made up from academy players. And what we're trying to understand here are the decisions that are placed on managers, the pressure that managers come under from board of directors. And we've seen that, haven't we, at Tottenham Hotspur, where Daniel Levy's clearly seen no value in the transfer market and is putting that a little bit more pressure on Maurizio Pochettino, who's of course got a history of developing players that are relatively cheap or indeed through the academy system itself.
We know one of our regular contributors, Tony McDonough, a big Sheffield Wednesday fan, and it would seem that if you're looking at the gap between the Premier League and the EFL, you mentioned it there, it's widened to £133 million in the first year with respect to TV rights. So much for the notion that the Championship is Premier League 2 or Premier League Division 2 that's been put out. What was the purpose in terms of developing this particular study, Rob?
Well, many understand the minutiae of football from a fan's point of view, that, you know, people used to cheering on their teams and being quite passionate in the stands. And I think understanding the decision-making process in the football industry from an economics and finance point of view is pretty important. But also, from my point of view, how you can put together the decisions that we make in everyday lives, the comparison between, say, investment decisions that we might make as individuals, and how football clubs operate. Because ultimately, we all live by the same sort of financial rules, and that is to say the selling price needs to be higher than the cost. And you pay your debts as they fall due. They're the basics of any sort of financial management. So starting to understand how football managers have done that and how they can be compared to our own financial decisions is often overlooked, and something that I think we can just shine a light on here and start to make a little bit more sense of the decisions that managers are making, why they're paying particular transfer fees or why they're not. Look at their transfer activity over the last few years and determine exactly how successful that has been, so we can work out whether or not short-term or long-term decision-making is good. And the unique opportunity I had was to work with Money Farm here allowed us to decode the business of football and examine how it operates, examine the factors that lead to success, and how those success factors can really be translated into investment behaviour. So ultimately how, say, the principles of Premiership Football Club management can translate into personal wealth management, how we can understand return on investment, how we can look at professional football to demonstrate diversification strategy, duration of investment, determining that long versus short-term goal-orientated approach, how you can examine high versus low-risk tactics to achieve the goals that you set yourself, whether that is at a personal level from your investment or whether that is as a football manager trying to get into the UEFA Champions League, trying to finish mid-table, or trying to stave off relegation. Because as you rightly pointed out there, the gap now is getting incredibly big between both the Premiership and the Championship, but also within the Premier League, because of the advent of things like financial fair play. It's making it much more difficult for clubs outside of that top six to break into that. And unpicking all of that detail and examining it from an investment point of view, I think it's been really interesting.
Again, allowing for the fact that Brendan Rodgers has just said it's not rocket science to say that Celtic should have strengthened this summer in an attempt to reach the Champions League. Obviously, they were eliminated from the competition. We turn to a club like Newcastle United and the pressure that the fans actually put on the board, clearly, and indirectly Rafa Benitez from that perspective. And likewise with respect to Pochettino at Tottenham, you've got this scenario where there is the sense from the fans that, well, you should buy players and we can't actually play the House of Fraser in the centre of midfield. We need to look at various other factors. Do you feel actually when you look at those kind of areas that actually, you know, maybe we should all be taking a leaf out of Sean Dyche's book at Burnley perhaps?
I think the Burnley model is absolutely fantastic. You consider how much he's invested over the last few years. It's clear that his talent as a manager and as a coach to get the best out of those players, both tactically and professionally, is really working, because they're the one team. This report we've done with Money Farm demonstrates that actually he's the only team in the top 10 of the table that's actually spent less than teams finishing in the bottom half of the table. So there must be something that he's doing there outside of an investment strategy that's really quite important. And you know, the other two clubs you've mentioned there are unique in their own right as well. And understanding the business decisions that are being made here, I think, is quite important, because as any football fan, you want your club to move forward. You want them to challenge for the next position at the league, to challenge for titles and for cups. And you believe inherently that the only way to do that is by spending lots of money on the transfer market, being more competitive. But the reality of football is that it is now a bona fide business. It generates huge amounts of money from television, from commercial partners, from sponsors, and putting all of that money in means you have to be sustainable. Financial fair play dictates that clubs need to be more financially sustainable. So from a Newcastle fan's point of view, let's say, understanding the investment decision that Mike Ashley's making at that football club and why they haven't necessarily signed the sorts of players that, let's say, Everton have signed, I think it's really quite important to inform their narrative so that they can get fully behind the team and understand that what we're seeing at Newcastle now is a much more sustainable club than what we had historically when they flirted with administration. They were working lower down the league pyramid, and the fact that over the next 5 or 10 years, I imagine they will start to creep back up the league and probably spend more heavily as they become even more financially sustainable. In sharp contrast to a team, let's say, like Fulham this year, that have gone out and spent every single penny of their TV earnings before they've kicked a ball.
From the perspective of directors such as Steve Gibson at Middlesbrough, for instance, do you feel that that model is going to be seen as very quaint and old-fashioned? I mean, you mentioned Burnley, of course, so long associated with Bob Lord. That notion of directors having the largesse to come in is now being replaced by the larger companies, the larger corporates, perhaps the oligarchs and also the money ball men, whether you're talking about Chelsea or indeed Liverpool.
Yes, absolutely. We did a study a number of years ago on ownership structure and how that might impact your playing performance and your financial performance. And what we've really found there is that those domestic owners, those local businessmen that have done really well, that historically would swoop into a club to stave off any administration or to solve some of those short-term cash flow problems, are basically being eradicated now from the Premier League, because the money that is on the table is so big. The value of the clubs now is becoming so high. We saw last week, didn't we, that Stan Kroenke has paid about £550 million to buy the rest of the shares at Arsenal, which values that football team at £1.8 billion. You know, that is 100 times bigger than they probably were 25 years ago. So they become unaffordable. And because they become unaffordable, it gives the opportunity for some of these much, much bigger companies, these very wealthy oligarchs or Middle Eastern owners to come in and pay that top money for those clubs and hopefully get a return on their investment if that's what they're after. And we've seen over the last 10 years, again, this shift from what we would call a trophy asset model. So Roman Abramovich's acquisition of Chelsea was absolutely that. He wanted to hold the Champions League trophy aloft, spent £1 billion in doing that. But because of the financial fair play regs and because of the way that teams are having to become more sustainable, it's focusing on much, much more of a return on investment model, which is then putting lots more pressure on managers to make the right investment decisions.
Do you think there's any possibility that the likes of Lincoln City or indeed Salford City in the National League, given that they're splashing the cash with respect to Aberdeen footballers, etc., that they could break into that Premiership and actually disturb the whole system? Or is it a case of, well, the top six, top seven will remain the top six or seven and that's the way it will be?
Under the current arrangement, and I've been quite critical of this over the last few years, you have essentially a lockout because of financial fair play, because the big clubs have voted in favour of that. It prevents anybody from tipping lots of money in. So a club that's local to us, Sheffield Wednesday, we've got a fairly wealthy owner, but that wealthy owner's not allowed to put money in. So there's no chance of those clubs breaking into the upper echelons of the Championship or indeed into the Premier League. And until those regulations are changed slightly, until they're softened, I'm unfortunately going to say that I think we're going to see a status quo being maintained for at least the next 10 years.
They could have had Carvalho that they went for a Dutchman, but that's Sheffield Wednesday. Where can people go to find out further information, Rob, in terms of, I mean, we've literally just skimmed the surface because that's all the time will allow us to do, but in terms of actually drilling down into this fascinating report, where's the best place to go?
Okay, so just nip onto the moneyfarm.com website. There's a bunch of information there. Just head over to the section on the website that talks about decoding the business of football at moneyfarm.com and have a good old read. The manager profiles are really interesting.
I certainly think that Finance for Sport and Leisure Managers, an introduction and managing sport finance and sport management, the basics by your good self, must read text from that point of view. I hope they're on the canon of text for your students at Sheffield Hallam.
Yeah, thanks for the plug.
Always happy. It's been a delight. Two final questions for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah, telephone link's been absolutely no problem at all.
In which case, can we hopefully prevail upon you to join us again in the not too distant future and who knows, share with us some more of your findings in the sport management industry?
Yeah, sure. No worries at all.
Wonderful. Now, there we have it, Ian Lennox. You know, Newcastle fans need to understand the investment model that Mike Ashley's applying. You've got a much more sustainable club. Would you rather be like Fulham, spend everything?
No, I wouldn't. But the trouble is, I didn't get it. I've forgotten the guy's name.
Rob Wilson. Like Bob Wilson,
he's
but with an R.
He's a knowledgeable man. Okay. Newcastle, they have their net spend during the transfer window was -£24 million net.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that earned £120 million in television money alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It gets 50,000 people every single game, and you're telling me that is a sensible sort of investment.
It's sustainable.
So underinvested in the team. It's ridiculous.
Maybe
you can then mention Fulham. And he's quite right. They are taking a huge risk, and also I think the interesting thing I found about his discourse was there's still one of the most important aspects of it is people like Sean Dyche at Burnley making very, very good decisions, management decisions.
Mm.
Now Newcastle United have been catastrophic for the last 10, 15 years. Absolutely catastrophic. I could go through and bore you with them. But
personally, Ian, I always feel that your highlight was the tenure of Bill McGarry. I thought he was outstanding in his period there, really. So.
Our highlight was when in the 90s, when Sir John Hall was chairman, Freddie Fletcher was managing director, and Kevin Keane was the manager.
Exactly.
They had three people who were very, very good at their job.
And you sold sold Andy Cole to that other group in Manchester.
Yes, he did.
We'll be talking about this, I'm sure, as the thing proceeds. But the good news is, and Rob seems to think that the prognosis for Newcastle United being in the Premiership is actually quite good for the next few years. Unlike Sheffield Wednesday. Never mind. Moving on, I'm sure you'd like to join me in congratulating Ian Jodie Orton. Of course, Jodie co-presented with co-host a number of times because she gave birth to a little baby boy.
Yes, I know she's on Facebook friends.
Exactly.
So,
work for that. Yeah. So, well done. It's very strange when your students start reproducing in many ways.
Oh, yes. right at the end of the...
what's going on with life and all the rest of its pieces?
Well, you see, when a daughter or a son arrives at university,
there you are, you see. And meanwhile, I'll be heading off to Belton in Northumbria for the first ever Bluebella Music Festival this Saturday. So you're more than welcome to join us if you fancy coming up there. I know it's a bit far away, but I'll be making that journey.
I'll be watching a football match, actually.
Well, quite rightly so, too. But I've got to ask you the question, wearing your cricketing hat, do you feel that charges of bringing cricket into distribute should be levelled against Ben Stokes, or has he suffered enough?
I don't know. He's had a terrible strain over him. For about nearly a year, isn't it? Was it last September when it all happened?
Exactly.
He's a tough guy.
Yes.
Obviously. To me, the ECB performance over the whole incident is bewildering. Before he'd been charged with anything, they stopped him from playing for England.
Mm.
And then when he had been charged, they brought him back. Now, you explain that, and the reason behind it, of course, is that they were terrified that they could be sued for a loss of earnings, which in his case, a million.
And 2-0 against India, it's not bad, really. So
it's all
winning. Well.
They weren't on the wicket, though. They weren't batting, were they? I've spoken to quite a number of people who know a lot more about cricket than I do, and they're not the fans of the ECB. Their strategy over the Test grounds was another extraordinary incident. It happened in the 90s. They decided they were trying to expand the number of Test grounds. They encouraged teams and countries to do it. And then they reversed the process. And, of course, poor old Durham got
I knew you wouldn't let it lie. You see, there are certain things you can guarantee with Ian Lennox, whether it's a case of simply dealing with his son-in-law trying to sell him an old computer. It's by and by, the whole sort of issue.
I'm still full of moral indignation at my age.
I think so.
It's a good thing.
Well, precisely. Rage against the light and so on. I see you've got that wonderful man, Mr. Neil Warnock, that will be taking on his Blues against Newcastle at 12:30, actually, on Saturday. So there we are.
That's right. It's on television, so I'm going to watch that.
Well, enjoy. That's the whole scenario.
I do.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Excellent. I thought we'd give you an expanded version because it was much needed, you know, to actually work through that and to reflect, obviously, on Rob Wilson's views on the financial aspects of
football. He's a very interesting man, actually. I've made a note of his website thing.
Excellent.
So I'll try and catch up with him.
Moneyfarm.com.
Yes,
it's all there. You can. It does grow on trees, after
it's
all.
Guy you'd like to be on a train journey, wouldn't you? Have a chat with him for 3 hours.
I'll have a word with Rob. I'll see if he's actually up for that. I'm sure it could be a whole new series.
I once met a man who was an SES and that sort of thing.
Well, and that's what you call being social as opposed to being obsessed with social media and simply burying your head in your mobile phone on a train.
Isn't it strange to watch things on buses and trains now? No one talks, all clicking away.
Well, yeah, it's a bizarre and peculiar world in which we live in, but in our own way, we're doing our bit to hopefully make life just that little bit more bearable for the whole sequence. I take it then, Ian, you will return next week?
Oh, yes, please, yeah.
Your tires. It's like we burn so bright, we burn out. I made you chase me. I wasn't that friendly. My love, my drug, we burn out. Oh. 'Cause I've been on the run so long they can't find me. You're waking up to remember I'm pretty. And when the chemicals leave my body, yeah, they're gonna find me in a hotel lobby. Drama.
And beautiful trauma. It's Lincoln's first community radio station. It's Siren Radio, and possibly at 10 o'clock we might have USF on Thursday, and again maybe not. We will definitely have Chris Clarkson doing Drive Time between 5 and 7 this evening, and at 7 o'clock it's the welcome return of the Stone Tapes episode 39, or volume 39, in which the message is very much Jaws and sharks and creature features, and Sam Stone, David J. Howe, George Mann, and from America, Patricia H. Ash, and also Robin Pierce will be there. Well, not Jaws, Robin Pierce. Taking us around, hopefully, to William Sitwell, The Milk, Wanderlust.
I guess it's wanderlust. The more I get to In the 21st century, travel bookings are remarkably easy things to do thanks to the World Wide Web. However, there are dangers, and the danger of fraud is certainly one of those key elements that comes across after a recent survey that's been produced to actually talk about nearly a third of British holidaymakers falling victim to some form of booking scam. Now, to address this particular aspect and provide us with some key words of wisdom in terms of coping with this dreadful occurrence, we're delighted to welcome the founder and co-owner of the awesome Villa Plus. That would be the fabulous Nick Cooper. How are you, Nick?
Hello, I'm fabulous, apparently. Thank you very much for that.
You can't have just phoned a company like Villa Plus and say, you know, it's not a wonderful world, etc. However, I mean, back in February this year, again, you yourself actually had images being stolen from your own legitimate firm people basically sort of scamming other folk.
Yeah, we've had thousands of our images stolen, along with other companies have as well, where people put up a fake Villa website. You know, we found actually over 100 fake Villa holiday websites in the last 12 months alone.
I mean, that is unbelievable.
You can't shut them down. This is the problem. Yeah. It's so annoying. You know, it's really frustrating. And what happens is a lot of the time they don't even have the decency to tell people they've been scammed. They wait till they actually arrive at the villa. And clients find out, mum, dad and three kids in August, and we have them turning up at our villas, and other companies do as well. This is the thing, as you mentioned there in your first line, consumers and customers have a great choice these days. They can do so much themselves on the internet. You know, sometimes you think, do they need a sort of a licensed holiday company or anything else? And, you know, to certain degrees, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But they have to take greater responsibility now because they're easy targets to be scammed.
The days where we were all being made aware of dodgy material, dodgy watches and so on, I mean, they've moved on. In this particular instance, as you rightly said, though, I mean, you've got a family holiday, even if it's not a family holiday, even if you're just heading off yourself, not only have you got the embarrassment, you've got the frustration, you've got the tension, you've got a whole range of other things, you've got the additional stress aspects as well that come across from that point of view. I mean, again, looking at some of the actual numbers of this survey, 4,700 unsuspecting holiday makers had £6.7 million stolen by fraudsters. This is fraud on a grand scale, isn't it, Nick?
Some of these people are, I mean, these are serious criminal gangs that, you know, we're all up against. And whatever's been reported, think how much hasn't been reported. Because I'm telling you, you know, it's almost the tip of the iceberg.
As I said, sometimes the embarrassment comes across and you think, oh, we're fine, it was just my fault and so on and so forth, so you don't report it.
That's right, yes. I mean, you know, but a lot of the time, you know, what do? You know, you scam, they could have lost, you know. I mean, I can tell you exactly how to not be scammed. I mean,
which is what we need to go to, I think, basically, from this point of view, because otherwise, how can we cope with this?
I'm not here as just a plug for our company, but we do have a webpage, villaplus.com/booksafe. And, you know, I spend over a year, you know, working out how to write this down to help people not to be scammed online. And any of you other people out there who are travel agents or operators or whatever, I don't mind. They can copy it word for word and put their name on it. Don't mind. Don't mind about the copyright on it. It's just about stopping these crooks, you know, and stopping people being scammed on villas. It's not just villas, you know, it's ski chalets. And then once they've exhausted these items, they will move on to cruises. There's loads of other things as well. You've got the other side as well now where you have, obviously, you know, the big booking companies are now Airbnb, Booking.com, HomeAway. Now, these aren't holiday companies, bear in mind. These are advertising portals with a nice bit of IT and a load of lawyers. And there's a lot of villa licensing overseas. Now, Airbnb, HomeAway and TripAdvisor were actually fined €300,000 each recently because they were advertising villas in the Balearics where you need to show a rental license. So there's all sorts of other little problems as well. And some of the worst culprits are, when you look on some of these ones now, is that click on the amenities. I clicked on the amenities in one of these villas the other days, and do you know what wasn't included in the amenities? You're going to be shocked at this. No smoke detectors and no carbon monoxide alarms. And, you know, we have such a massive health and safety department within Villa Plus. And we do it for a reason. I know people always laugh, health and safety, blah, blah, blah.
There are cases, only a matter of years ago, instances take place, and you just think, this is unacceptable.
Yes. There should be a basic level, you know, of consumer protection for everyone. And health and safety comes in that. And just by allowing anyone to put up accommodation on sites or anybody to advertise them anywhere, the safety net is being dropped here. So there's two different sides. One is being scammed, and the other is, are you going to be safe overseas as well? And sometimes you only find out how good a company is, you know, is when something goes wrong. We spend millions of pounds overseas on our overseas offices. You know, but all these other ones, there. Where's the phone number? What are you going to do? Who are you going to contact? You know, what happens? You know, I'm ill. Someone wants this. It's a
progressive,
big operation.
It's certainly more than just buyer beware, caveat emptor. You need to clearly have certain things that are in place. Is there a short checklist that you can actually do in order to actually say, okay, fine, I'm not going to go down that way? Or is it simply a case of, well, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is?
Yes, you're right. But it's a number of different things. First of all, is the phone number on the site a mobile? Ring it. Do they answer it? Can you find any independent reviews? Because all these fake villa webcast sites, they have their own reviews on their own site they've written themselves. Can you prove where the company is situated? You know, can you do a Google Street thing and actually see that company with their company name outside there? But these crooks are getting smarter. Let me give you a little example. Before, they used to set up a new website and then claim they were going for 12 years. So you could just look on something like who.is or whois.com and see, well, hang on, you only set up the website 3 months ago, yet you've been claiming you're going for 12 years. They're crooks. Now, they wait for an old website, a domain name, to be dropped. Then they'll take it over, and all of a sudden, it looks like they've been going for 12 years. Unless you all sort of know what you're doing like me, and I can find out when it was transferred over. But not many people can see that. Then you have a very good way of doing it is download some of their images on their villas and do a Google image search. And you can see, is that appearing in any other company's websites? And you know they might have just copied it. A lot of time what they will do is they will flip the image over so it makes it harder to be detected. So you have to flip it back. We've had some of our images flipped over, and the table tennis table that we buy from Donic, D-O-N-I-C, all of a sudden it's spelt the other way around. I thought, well, there'd be C-I-N-O-D? Mm. Yes, it would. Mm. So there's lots of little things. Do they have availability? Loads of availability? Are their prices too cheap? Can they do 12 nights on a Tuesday in Mallorca in August? Look at every little thing. Take responsibility and let's beat the crooks. Don't make it easy for them.
In your own words from an article that one of our other semi-regular correspondents, Simon Calder, writing for The Independent, actually said, it has never been more important for the buyer to be aware when renting a villa and to take extra precautions and be super vigilant.
No,
it does pay dividends.
Yeah, he's right. Now, I've corresponded with Simon quite a bit on these fake villa websites. We have quite a bit of correspondence going. He's a good lad. Mm. He cares, you know. I mean, yeah.
And that's
at the
heart.
Very, very true.
It's at the heart of all good journalism. We have to actually expose these scams. And hopefully, even this little short piece that we've actually done today, Nick, will at least get people to actually think, okay, fine, let's just beware of what we're going with this and check some of the things that you've suggested.
Absolutely, because a lot of your people out there will suddenly think, oh, well, I won't be scammed because I'm of greater intelligence or whatever. Absolutely.
The easiest target, Nick. The easiest target if you think you're there. Not going to happen to me, of course not.
You are bang on. You're absolutely spot on there. It will always happen to someone else. Mm. Never to me because I won't fall for that. Well, people, I mean, I don't know what you like when you book your own holiday. You get excited.
Yeah.
You know, you're
and the excitement floods over the parts of the brain that's responsible
over.
For logic.
Click, book, send that bank transfer. Yeah. And then it is, oh, crikey, what have I done?
Mm. You know? Mm.
Yeah, no, that is the way it works. And holidays, it's an emotional experience booking a holiday. And there's a lot of websites out there, even legitimate ones, that make the booking process simple. They spend millions on IT to make the booking process simple. That doesn't mean to say you will have a good holiday. Unless you've done your own research properly.
Exactly.
Do your own research properly, because others there are going to make the booking process simple.
VillaPlus.com, I say one of the websites you can go to, which is perfectly legitimate and sorted through to find out some of the context from this point of view.
It was our 32nd birthday just last week.
Whoa. Only 2 years younger than Captain Kirk was when he started his 5-year mission, just to
I used to watch the old Star Trek movie when I was a kid. But not whilst I was working. I've still got my same desk that I bought 31 and a half years ago. How about that?
Fantastic.
Still
Nick,
sitting there.
In order to maintain authenticity, we always have two questions that we tend to wrap off these interviews with. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
No, it's been fine, thank you.
So the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again and keep us appraised not only of what Villa Plus are doing, but even more in the holiday scene? Will you come back?
You can do it. Listen, I've been doing this since I was 17 years old. I'm 58 now. You can call on me anytime. I occasionally get wound up, get a bit overexcited or whatever, but on this stuff here with the crooks, I mean, it really, you know, it's really frustrating and I really do get wound up over it. So if I go overboard a bit, my apologies, but, you know, it's only because I care.
Nick, you will return, no doubt.
Thanks ever so much. Very nice to speak to you.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
song. Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy. We'll make you happy. We'll make you happy.
That had to happen with respect to artificial intelligence and a variety of other bits and pieces. There is now finally a breastfeeding friend app that's been developed for Google Assistant during World Breastfeeding Week. So who better than to address some of the key issues with respect to this and hopefully put the human perspective on using the technology to actually help young mums with breastfeeding support than all-round wonderful individual. She's the fabulous Dr. Philippa Kay, GP and author. How are you, Philippa?
I'm well, thank you.
Wonderful. This particular digital tool, like initially when I saw it, I thought, another digital area. We might as well just go back to rearing Tamagotchis and so on, but that's a different line entirely. The serious application of this is that actually 42% of breastfeeding mothers wish that they'd known that breastfeeding didn't come easily at first, because there is that sense, I gather, that somehow you think it's all going to happen naturally. That's not necessarily the case.
Absolutely not. It's a challenge that you have to learn, and then baby has to learn too. So even when you're on baby number 2, 3 or however many, you may know what you're doing, but baby has to learn it too. And it is a real challenge. And the wonder of this new tool is that often it's 3 o'clock in the morning when you're tired and emotional and your breasts hurt or your nipples hurt and you're just not sure that this tool is available and can really help you out. You just open the Google Assistant and say, okay, Google, talk to breastfeeding friend. And then you can get links to pictures of how to latch on and loads of really helpful advice.
Start for Life obviously conducted this survey. They also address the notion that support is actually needed from that point of view. Let's talk a little bit about the digital divide, that actually we take smartphones as almost a kind of natural, ubiquitous part of our experiences. Is that the case, or is it a case of, no, it is genuinely straightforward, it's fairly simple. If you have Alexa or any of the sort of devices that are actually there, you can actually use it and it'll provide useful advice.
I'm pretty much a Luddite. And I found it really easy to use. And the advantage of the Google Assistant one is that it's free. It's free to download and it's free to use. And we have to remember that these are women of reproductive age. So they are young women and therefore extremely likely to have a smartphone. And we're not replacing the health visitors and the midwives and all the information that is out there on the Start for Life website and all the leaflets that we can get. This is just something that is extra to provide additional support.
And clearly one of the reasons we're using the medium of radio, podcasts, a variety of other things, is to kind of raise that awareness. Do you think that actually new mums are actually unaware of the availability, or is it a case of getting the right kind of availability? Yes, they've got their smartphones, but somehow sifting through that ocean of information can sometimes be a bit challenging, particularly if you've got a new child as well.
Absolutely. The internet is a wonderful place, but it is, there is so much information out there that it is very difficult to work out which information is correct. And here we have NHS approved advice, so you know that you're going to get the right advice. Can I have a glass of wine? Can I breastfeed if I'm taking X medication? Or whatever your question is, you know you're going to get advice that is actually correct. And I think that's a huge advantage here.
One of the skill sets that you've developed to ultimate extreme levels is translating what we refer to as medicalese into English. Will that be very much the case with respect to this app, or will it be a case of suddenly they start talking about Krebs citric acid cycle and a whole variety of other bits and pieces, and I think, I just want to know, can I actually do this?
Marvellous knowledge about the Krebs cycle. I haven't heard of that in a while.
I always like to bring in occasional bit of my biology background.
No, this is all very friendly, user-friendly, all language that you know about. We're not going to use terms to cover different kinds of infections or whatever. It's just simply, for example, when to be concerned if your breast goes red or is very painful. So it's all very user-friendly language. We understand we are talking to tired women who are having the challenge of learning to breastfeed, and we're trying to help here, so all very user-friendly.
And clearly also the fact that it's World Breastfeeding Week, it's not necessarily just a week, it's a year-round process, so clearly there's an interesting line on that perspective. But people are listening to this, Philippa, where can they actually go to for further information to actually find out a bit more about the Start for Life campaign? Would it be the nhs.uk/Start for Life website by any chance?
Absolutely, that's completely right. www.nhs.uk/Start for Life.
And I was specifically asked by one of our producers when she knew that you were actually joining us on the programme today to say, did you really want to be a ballerina?
Yeah, for a little while when I was very young, and then the doctor gene kicked in.
Ah, interesting. I just thought it was a fascinating thing on that base. I mean, there's obviously got to be a series that can be developed about the ballerina who becomes a doctor and vice versa, all sorts of things.
A really good message for young girls.
Exactly, exactly. Philippa, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today about the new digital availability that's around for young mums in terms of breastfeeding and so on. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us yourself?
Yes, it's been wonderful. You know, we've covered dancing and biochemistry and all kinds
well,
of things.
Well, exactly. And if you can't deal with that adenosine triphosphate molecule going, then really life's sort of just not worth the experience. I take it then we can prevail upon you to connect with us again. You might well return in the near future.
Absolutely.
There's music and there's laughter. I don't know if I'm scared of dying, but I'm scared of living too fast, too slow. Regret, remorse, hold on. No, no, I gotta go. There's no starting over, no new beginnings. Time raises on. Just gotta keep on keeping on. Gotta keep on going, looking straight out on the road. Can't worry about what's behind you, what's coming for you further up the road. Try not to hold on to what is gone. I try to do right what is wrong. I try to keep on keeping on. Yeah, I just keep on keeping on. I hear a voice call, calling out for me. These shackles I made in an attempt to be free. Be it for ease.
As we've been saying throughout the programme, of course, today is A-Level Results Day, and it's also a metaphorical crossroads where decisions on the next stage of education or employment are made and realised. Students across the country obviously waking up, realising that this could be one of the most important days of their lives. Let's talk a little bit more about how students can also inspire their parents to reshape their own future by talking to the Deputy Chief Executive Officer of Arden University. That's Victoria Stakelam. How are you, Victoria?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Victoria, talk to us a little bit about this particular aspect here in which parents who are sort of maybe thinking, well, maybe if we had our time again, we'd like to do this. It's never too late.
That's right. Obviously, parents are really emotionally invested in the journey that their children go on throughout their schooling, but particularly as they head out into the world following A-levels. And we did some research that found that it's a real trigger point for parents to reappraise their own decisions and sort of reflect on their life choices. And of course, it does also come at a time when perhaps as they start facing an empty nest, as children are going off to university, they're realizing that maybe they could start considering doing something for themselves and maybe approaching higher education themselves.
It does seem as though clearly this particular time of the year always seems to generate a bit of a media frenzy in terms of either results going up, going down, and all manner of other bits and pieces and whether university is worth it or not. What are your own views about the exam results as they've been released today?
Well, I think it's a really positive time for many, but of course for some there will be results that they are disappointed with. And I think what's really, really important is that students getting their results today, if they aren't the results they want, understand that this is not the end of the line. There are many, many options. We often view this time as quite binary, as in you got great results and you're off to the university you hoped for, or you're facing into a dead-end job and that's it. And that's absolutely not the case. I think there are more options for students than ever before, and people are just starting to tune into that and realise that it's not that binary. You can take a couple of years' work, decide what you want to do, and perhaps move forward in a different direction. You know, it's a big decision to take age 18, how you're going to spend 3 years and potentially direct the rest of your life. And in fact, there's good statistics that say that for most people, the university degree that they take will not, in fact, be linked to the career that they end up in. So at Arden University, we have a view that spend some time, have a career, and then throughout that career, upskill yourself and keep sort of reinventing the skills that you need to succeed and to progress.
If you combine an upper second in archaeology and anthropology with yoga, raising three children, an organic allotment, songwriting and performing, you've got an interesting portfolio there. Clearly, you'd be inspiring all sorts of folk from that particular sort of experience. Do you feel, I mean, again, you're the second person in your own family to get a degree, that actually this whole notion of, you know, the special nature of a degree, that time to kind of reflect on life and so on, is something we can never underestimate, really?
I think that's really important. So yes, you've alluded to the fact my education journey was not conventional. I dropped out of school. I didn't make great choices as a young person, and then I was lucky enough to have a great educational experience later, which was very formative for me. And we see that across our student population, and actually with many of my colleagues. Many of us have had non-standard education experiences. We've left school, we've worked, we've experienced a bit of life, and then come to understand perhaps more deeply and more holistically where we want to be and where we want to be headed. And I think it is really important that people feel a sense of optimism rather than fear about what the future can hold. We designed a learning experience that has aimed to kind of kick out the barriers to people returning to education later. And we have a breadth of qualifications here at Arden that are all about workplace behaviours and skills that are going to set people up for life. And I'm also a student, so as well as those other things, I'm studying my master's in psychology, which just goes to show, if you are prepared to not watch too much television, you can fit a lot in. So I would really recommend that to people.
And why is it important that people actually continue with their education? I mean, to somebody who might be saying, oh, I've done all that, I don't want to actually go back to the whole thing. Why would you actually recommend that actually the thing about lifelong learning is exactly that? It's something where we're constantly sort of finding a new challenge, a new speciality over the horizon.
I think there are two reasons that really stand out for me. And the first is very practical. You know, our working lives are changing at an unprecedented scale with, you know, digital technology being the obvious reason for that, and the explosion in data and things like that. I think for people to have meaningful and sort of stable careers over time, they have to continue learning. Things are changing too fast. There is a statistic that something like 85% of the jobs in existence in the year 2030 will be jobs that do not exist today. So from a kind of career security perspective, people need to continue learning and developing skills. But the other reason is actually it's really rewarding. It's really heartening. We had our first graduation ceremony this summer, and there were a couple of students I spoke to who just talked about the confidence it's given them returning to education and gaining those skills, as well as the obvious kind of on paper they now have some additional things to add. But even aside from that and ahead of that, the confidence it's given them has game-changed the way they feel about themselves. So it's hugely enjoyable. It's a very fulfilling and meaningful thing for someone to do. And it's also really important given the lengths of working life people will have now and the shape those careers are taking.
Well, we're certainly looking forward in a couple of weeks' time to, of course, the cohort of 2018 graduating from the University of Lincoln at the Cathedral. So life continues in its own merry little way. But as far as Arden University is concerned, presumably it's arden.ac.uk, the best place to go to for further information.
Absolutely right, yes. And there's all sorts of useful tools and information on there to help people understand and consider their options and the kind of support they will find.
Well, allowing for the original definition of education as educare, to lead out a person's inner being and potential, I think that's one of the best reasons. So maybe not just considering, but possibly actively engaging in some of the great opportunities that are actually provided by the higher educational field. But then you might well say, I would say that in any case, but that's par for the course. Two final questions for your good self, Victoria. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have, absolutely. It's been great, thank you.
Good. Well, can we look forward to maybe connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of the excellent work you're doing at Arden and connecting with us again, as I say, to share with us the joy of continuing education?
I would be very happy to.
Enough time to actually thank our team today: Gabriella Peralta, Stephanie Romashevsky, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Dr. Rob Wilson, Dr. Philippa Kane, Victoria Stakelum, and of course Nick Cooper. And you, dear listener, for being part of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Thursday, August the 16th, 2018. Happy A-Level Results Day, as we've said. And whatever you happen to find yourself in, keep enjoying Siren Radio. You know it makes sense. We will be back next week with the Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Tom Walker and Leave a Light On will just squeeze us into the next little track, which is by Churches and Miracles. So have a great Thursday. Keep on keeping on and enjoy.
Leave the light on.
Siren 107.3.
Ask me no questions, I will tell you no lies. Careful.
what you wish for. We're looking for angels in the darkest of skies.